Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 1, observing the armies, text number 13. Tatakshankha Sivirascha Panavanaka Gomaka Sahasaiva Vyahanyanta Sashabda Sumala Bhavat. I'm just going to read the translation because there's no purport. After that, the conch shells, drums, bugles, trumpets, and horns were all suddenly sounded, and the combined sound was tumultuous. So it may seem like we're wasting our time just reading the verse. But an advanced devotee, when they hear this verse, they can actually hear the conch shells and the drums and the bugles. They're actually on the battlefield of Kurukshetra with Arjuna and the Pandavas. And so for them, it's quite exciting. Imagine if you had your transcendental time machine and you got into it. And of course, we'd just fly over the battlefield. I don't think we'd be personally interested in getting on a chariot. And if we did, we'd probably want to be on Arjuna's side. So at least when... In any case, a devotee can actually perceive with his spiritual senses the activities that are going on in the battlefield. Just like Sanjaya, he had transcendental television in his heart, and he was able to awaken that transcendental TV in the heart of Dhritarashtra. So although Dhritarashtra was blind by birth, he could actually envision the battle of Kurukshetra. And the vision means not just to see, but one can actually hear the sounds that are going on there. Because after all, Sanjaya was not just reading Krishna's lips when he's speaking the Bhagavad Gita. He was actually hearing it directly from Krishna and talking to Arjuna. Therefore, as we become purified, as our consciousness becomes purified, then the Bhagavad Gita actually becomes more experienced. We can actually perceive with our spiritual senses, but not just like an ordinary battle, but this is Krishna is present there. Wherever Krishna is, we'll find out, the whole spiritual world is there. So Krishna has spiritualized the whole battlefield, so it's just like being in Vaikuntha. Although it's a battle, and people are going to undoubtedly be killed, but because Krishna was present there, it was just like Vaikuntha. Exactly like Vaikuntha. Or even better than Vaikuntha, it was like Goloka Vrindavan. So, we're going to die anyhow. Might as well die in Krishna consciousness. And if Krishna is personally present, there's every likelihood of dying in Krishna consciousness. And even when we get the consolation prize, we at least go to the heavenly planets. That's the worst that's going to happen. Text 14. Anyhow, we can just go over that. So the conch shells. Anyone ever hear a conch shell? We hear it every day. You come to Mangalarti, you hear a conch shell. So just imagine hearing the conch shell. Then the verse becomes a little bit more alive, not just some words on a page that we got to get through for some reason or another. But we can see so many warriors on the battlefield, and they all have conch shells, and we can listen to them blowing them. Now, to us, it may seem like it's an imagination, but that's what our imagination is meant for. There's spiritual imagination, and then there's material imagination. Now, if this was an ordinary book, and we heard about people blowing a conch shell, then that's what we'd get. Just, we can imagine them, actually, those materialists or advanced can actually visualize when they're reading and can imagine the conch shell blowing in the hands of so many people. So what's the difference between our imagining a conch shell in the hands of so many warriors, or different conch shells in the hands of different warriors, and an ordinary person just reading an ordinary book and imagining soldiers with conch shells. The difference is that this is scripture. And what makes it scripture? Because, first of all, Krishna is present. If we just imagine warriors on a battlefield blowing conch shells, it won't probably do us very much good, because our aim is to become conscious of Krishna. If we leave our body thinking of warriors blowing conch shells, we'll probably come back in the Slovenian army. Be born to a father who's in the army and grow up and probably become a bugler in the army or something. But because this is about Krishna, therefore we have to remember it in relation to Krishna. Krishna is on the battlefield. He's listening also to the blowing of the conch shells. Sanjaya is listening. We're hearing it through our disciples' succession. And our disciples' succession, they're always attached to Krishna, just like Arjuna was attached to Krishna. Therefore, we should include the whole battlefield, including Krishna in the battlefield, and the fact that Krishna has spiritualized the battlefield, and therefore it becomes a transcendental experience, hearing the conch shell. Because everything is actually spiritual, and when Krishna is included, then we realize its spiritual nature. And when Krishna is not included, that's called material. So here are the conch shells, there's warriors blowing, according to what it said in the Bhagavad Gita. Then it becomes spiritualized, and then there's drums. Imagine some drums being played, and bugles, and trumpets, and horns, and just listen to the music. Everyone likes to listen to music. But listen to this music on a battlefield, and just as much as we can be on that battlefield with Krishna there. And then it becomes a transcendental experience. And the nice thing about the transcendental experience is the more we experience it, the more we gain the ability to experience it even deeper. And it gets deeper eternally. What did Sanjaya say at the end of the Bhagavad Gita? I've read this and now I want to go on and read something else. What did he say? In the repeated remembrance of this conversation between Krishna and Arjuna, I'm taking pleasure, being thrilled at every moment. And remembering again the wonderful form of Krishna, I am ever more struck with wonder, and I rejoice again and again. He also said something about hair standing on it. In the repeated remembrance, so that's a some Rajam, let's see, it's a previous verse, 74. Sanjaya Vaja, Ityaham Vasudevasya Parthasya Cha Mahatmanaha Sampadam Imam Asho Sam Adbhutam Roma Harshanam. Sanjaya said, thus I've heard the conversation of these two great souls, Krishna and Arjuna, and so wonderful is that message that my hair is standing on end. So how many of us, after hearing this message, our hair is standing on end? Some of us have shaved heads, you wouldn't notice it. I see a little Sika raised up there. So what's the difference between Sanjaya and ourselves is that Sanjaya was actually perfectly experiencing what was going on. And we can also do that, just a question of purification. And not only that, but because we're hearing in a disciple succession, we get even more benefit than Sanjaya got. Because we get the added benefit of the association of so many acharyas when we hear the Bhagavad Gita. And they add even more ecstatic flavor to it, and perhaps even more ecstatic understanding to it. To Tak swater hayer yukte mahati syandane sito madhava pandavais chaiva divya sankhyam pritamatu. On the other side, both Krishna and Arjuna, staged on a great chariot, drawn by white horses, sounded their transcendental conch shells. This is more like what is the subject matter for our artists. In the, maybe in this, I don't know if in this Bhagavad Gita there's a picture of it, but they used to be in the, here we go. So everyone, photograph this in your mind. Is Krishna and Arjuna blowing on the conch shells. So that's the type of thing we should visualize. And here, I'm just trying to imagine Krishna playing, how nice the sound must be when Krishna plays on his conch shell. Who could blow a conch shell better than Krishna? What's that? Yes, these white horses, there's white horses. Proof. They're white. Sage and Greg sounded their transcendental conch shells. Purport. In contrast with the conch shell blown by Bhishmadev, the conch shells in the hands of Krishna and Arjuna are described as transcendental. The sounding of the transcendental conch shells indicated that there is no hope of victory for the other side because Krishna was on the side of the Pandavas. Jayastu Pandavam Panduputranam Yesham Pakshe Janardana. Victory is always with persons like the sons of Pandu because Lord Krishna is associated with them. And whenever and wherever the Lord is present, the goddess of fortune is also there, because the goddess of fortune never lives alone without her husband. Therefore, victory and fortune awaiting Arjuna, as indicated by the transcendental sound produced by the conch shell of Vishnu or Lord Krishna. Besides that, the chariot on which both the friends were seated had been donated by Agni, the fire god, to Arjuna. And this indicated that the chariot was capable of conquering all sides, wherever it was drawn over the three worlds. As I explained yesterday, the primary victory is overcoming material nature, the modes of material nature, because without overcoming the material modes of material nature, any victory is only temporary. And therefore, neha bikramana shosti pratyavayo navidyate swapam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahatobayat. So real victory is when we transcend the modes of material nature and come to the platform of Krishna consciousness. And certainly if Krishna is there blowing on the conch shell, it'd wake up even the sleeping devotees. There's no question of Arjuna's falling asleep, at least at that time. Certainly the conch shell woke him up. And indeed, it's such a, who can imagine how wonderful the sound must be, hearing Krishna's conch shell. It's equal to hearing his flute. We can find in the world, music has such a powerful influence on people. Devotees can give up drugs. They can even give up sometimes their girlfriends or boyfriends, but they can't give up music. They're too much enchanted by it. So what to speak? Because the original, one of the four powerful attractions that Krishna has, one of the four qualities he has that no one else has, is his playing on his transcendental flute. And those of us who have been in Goloka Vrindavan can't help but somehow or another connect music with Krishna's flute. And if we hear the original sound of Krishna's flute, then everything else will be seen properly. And Krishna's flute came through the ears of Lord Brahma, and it was manifested as what? Gayatri. So those who chant Gayatri perfectly, they'll be able to hear Krishna's flute. actually they'll be able to enter into the spiritual world with this, not only Krishna's flute, but see Krishna's associates and the whole Chintamani Prakara Sadmasu Kalpa Vriksha and everything else there, the Saravi cows. The Vedas came from his mouth, but Gayatri, is in the Brahma Samhita, says Gayatri entered into his ears and came out through his mouth. The flute, the sound of Krishna's flute specifically. But Krishna gave Brahma the Vedas. So I'll stop there actually. Any questions? We should probably just read through some of this because you have to be more transcendental than I am to explain about Yudhamana, Shubhi, Kranta, Udamoja, Saviryavan. I think we've already gone through that. Actually, coming up, there are some more purports. But a lot of it is setting the scene so we can have some reference. Yes.
So when they were blowing all these flutes and they had made this tumultuous sound, they probably thought that now they had victory. And then just Arjuna and Krishna, just two flutes and their hearts shattered.
Yeah, heart shattered. Yeah, anyhow. Imagine what the sound of Krishna's... If you heard Krishna's sound of his conch shell, I guess hopefully it at least melt our heart.
These are Duryodhana's side, right? This sound is the army of Duryodhana who's blowing
that. Yeah. Well, both sides, I think. Bhishma blew his conch shell.
Did Krishna already blow his?
No. Then Bhishma, first of all, Bhishma blew it. And then all the other people, I guess on their side, on Duryodhana's side. Because we'll find out later on, Krishna and Arjuna blew it. And then the side of Arjuna started to blow it also. Ananta Vijayam Rajan. And then everyone on Krishna's side started to blow it. And they shattered the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra. They blew their ears out. They couldn't hear. But we can just imagine this, how powerful sound is, that these are great, great warriors, and the greatest of the warriors, they practiced mantras. They were powerfully strong, but they primarily, they were expert at chanting astras. An astra was not something you went to a factory and manufactured. It was a sound vibration that could change everything. Well, it's the sound vibration that was able to influence the material energy. Or was, it would, well, it controlled the material energy. So that with the sound, chanting a sound, you could create a mountain. Now that sounds quite extraordinary. Because we can't do that. But everything is created out of sound. In the beginning was the word. In the beginning, Krishna created the universe through his Brahman effulgence, and Brahman effulgence manifested through things like avyakta and pradhan, etc., etc. But they're all different varieties of sound vibration, because sound is the original, and then from sound comes everything else. So, empowered by Krishna, because ultimately Krishna is the doer, if he gives one the intelligence how to manipulate the material nature, one can create everything through sound, as Krishna created everything through sound. So his instruments, in the form of these warriors, can also create everything through sound, if you know the technique. So they're able to manifest mountains and tornadoes, and Arjuna shot one astra, and millions of other arrows came out of that one arrow. So these things are possible. But it takes a little experience and expertise and learning. And therefore, both the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas, they went to school from the beginning of their lives, from 5 years old, Kumara, Asharat, Pragyo. And they didn't play video games. They didn't chase after the little girls after school. No, they were completely sold out to their guru, and the guru is expert in the science. We find that Arjun and Duryodhana and the company, everyone, they got an expert guru in the form of Dronacharya. And he knew the science, and therefore he could teach others the science of astras and whatever. Of course, there was some special credit if you knew how to shoot an arrow straight. Otherwise, you might create an astra and kill everyone on your own side. So Arjuna was specifically worthy because he was a great archer. So there was some merit for archery. But ultimately, the archery itself, it wasn't Arjuna. Because Arjuna was able to shoot with both hands and shoot very quickly. But still, it was the astras. When you face someone like Bhishma or others, Dronacharya, who knew the art of the demigod astras, you had to know the astras too, or else you got wiped out. Someone shoots 10,000 arrows at you, you better be quick. Or else you might, have to call for the fire department because you got a lot of holes in throughout your body. Matter of fact, it may be hard to find you. All you can see is holes. But generally speaking, of course, as the battlefield Kurukshetra went on, the rules got broken. But supposedly, theoretically, the foot soldiers were supposed to fight against the foot soldiers, the chariot drivers against the chariot drivers, the elephants against the elephants. But we don't find that rule, especially as the battle drew on, very carefully followed. For instance, they weren't supposed to fight at night, but at the end it just went wild. It was like, only a small number of people survived the battle. In any case, who knows, maybe some of us were at the battlefield, and here we are now. But the real purpose, Krishna arranged the battlefield, and so many millions of warriors at least were fighting in that battlefield, elephants and chariots and all these astras, just so he could speak the Bhagavad Gita. The whole Mahabharata was not only just to entertain people, because Mahabharata teaches about the laws of karma, especially karma, something about renunciation, something about dharma. But the whole Mahabharata is just so that while reading the Mahabharata, one will come to the Bhagavad Gita and learn the basic principles of spiritual advancement. That's the whole thing. So although Mahabharata is so big, this war that took place wasn't an easy thing to arrange. But ultimately, it's just so we can hear Bhagavad Gita. The devotees, when they hear Bhagavad Gita, they have such a great opportunity. So much trouble went into arranging Krishna to speak to Arjuna. And if we take advantage of Bhagavad Gita, then we become very fortunate. Otherwise, if Krishna just, he was walking by Arjuna's house one day, and he dropped in, and Arjuna asked him a few questions, and gave a few answers. It wouldn't be very exciting. I mean, probably Bhagavad Gita wouldn't be as popular as it is. And Arjuna probably would have fell asleep during the... But just the excitement of what's going on is enough to keep people reading. Even they come up to the Bhagavad Gita and they think, oh my God, 700 verses of philosophy. I don't wonder if I can get through it. But because it's part of the Mahabharata, and there's going to be 8 days of war, 18 days of war, therefore, they thought, oh, I'll get through it. I'll read the thing. So, any questions? Yes?
This book, is anything that mentioned? What is it? Expansion of Balaram, like other paraphernalia, or is it something else?
Kurukshetra?
No, flute, Krishna's flute. What is Tattva?
Well, everything is expansion of Krishna's energy. And Balaram's, I don't know specifically, but Balaram seems to provide most of his, he provides the bedstead and everything else, so I don't know whether the flute is a bamboo flute. It comes from the bank of the Jamuna, and the parents of the flute, they're very proud. Flute is doing so much service. But whether, I mean, the spiritual world is a manifestation of Balaram, so I guess the flute is included in there. Safe to say. Sandini, Ladini, and Sambit. So Balaram manifests the spiritual world. But it's a little technical. I mean, whether it's Balaram or Krishna, I mean, I'll accept both. Anything else? Yes.
It's not a very important question, but
probably won't get a very important answer.
I hope it's not completely stupid, but
okay. We'll give you a percentage.
There is some, and there are horses pulling these carts. So it's, but maybe.
Why didn't they just use sound to pull the cart? Because it wouldn't be very exciting. Besides that, there's a sense of equality in the whole thing. In other words, Krishna could have, I mean, Arjuna could have just thrown a Brahmastra weapon and wiped everyone out. But there is some kind of, you know, Kshatriya etiquette. And besides that, they weren't really that interested in technology because they already had the most advanced technology. But there was a sense of what was permissible and what was not. Anything beyond that would have required more and more technology, but that would just be a waste of time. Say you had a tank, but then you just throw a Brahmastra weapon, the thing is disappears. So what would be the advantage of having a tank if it's just going to disappear? Then you got to train all these warriors to stay in this box made out of metal, and everyone got to manufacture it. It goes on and on and on. But if you have two equal warriors on a chariot and horses, first of all, the horses get to participate, and then, you know, it's easy. You know, people, ecologically, it's more sound. Just get a few dead trees to make a chariot. And you don't have to get petroleum and, you know, for the. So they didn't want to waste their time on those things. I mean, if someone else probably decided, Duryodhana said, let's bring in the tanks. Then it would have created an arms race like we have now. It would have been more destructive than the war is. Just like we find so many people die in wars, but more people die from the hospital treatments nowadays, or from the flu injections, or from the pollution coming from all the so-called advancement. So everyone would have died. You have this arms race, and everyone dies, not just a few warriors, but the whole world dies. So we have this arms race now. Everyone's trying to become more technologically advanced. We find that people live, if they live to 100 years old, they're considered extraordinary. But back then, when everything was much more ecologically friendly, people lived for 1,000 years. So why create a tank and kill everyone when you just have a horse? And the worst that's going to happen is a horse and you're going to die rather than everyone else. Anything else? Thank you very much. Kretaraj Shrimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.